Today's gospel is taken from the third chapter of Luke. In the 15th year of the reign of Emperor Tiberius, when Pontius Pilate was a governor of Judea and Herod was ruler of Galilee, and his brother Philip, ruler of the region of Iturea and Trachonitis, and Licinius, ruler of Abilene, during the high priesthood of Annas and Caiaphas, the word of God came to John, son of Zechariah, in the wilderness. He went into all the region around the Jordan, proclaiming a baptism of repentance for the forgiveness of sins. As it is written in the book of the words of the prophet Isaiah, "The voice of one crying out in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord, make his path straight. Every valley shall be filled, and every mountain and hill shall be made low. And the crooked shall be made straight, and the rough ways made smooth. And all flesh shall see the salvation of God." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. Our theme, by the way, is waiting for Jesus, and the text we're going to focus on is preparing for the Lord. So Ken will talk a little about that, and then I'll follow him up.
Morning. As I think you're probably aware by now, we're doing a four-week session on generosity, and today's topic is generosity for your family. But before I get into that, I did read a story just the other day about a church that was having some financial problems, and the minister got up before the congregation on this particular Sunday and was explaining that that something needed to be done to get the church in a better financial condition. And so he made this plea that if whoever gave the largest contribution on that particular Sunday would be allowed to select three hymns. So the collection plates were passed out, and they came forward, and the minister looked, and to his surprise, one of them had a $100 bill in it. He was kind of taken aback, and he thought, well, someone here was extremely generous today. Would the person who put the $100 bill in, would you please indicate to me who you are? And an older lady at the back kind of timidly raised her hand, and he said, well, that's wonderful. Why don't you come forward so that we can all recognize you and show our appreciation? So she made her way up to the front and kind of smiling, and her eyes were twinkling a bit. And so after they had recognized her and gave her thanks, maybe a slight applause or something, then the minister said to her, well, which three hymns do you want? And she turned and smiled again at the congregation's eyes bright, and she said, I want him and him and him. Maybe a little problem there with the communication, but it seemed to work. One of the other things that I thought about when I was getting prepared to talk to you today was last Sunday, after I gave my little message on generosity to God, I went home and I was looking through the Olympian, the paper, and I found this large editorial with a headline something like this. I don't remember it exactly, but it said, giving is good for you and for others. And as I read through it, what it was basically saying is that some research has been done to show that people who are more generous tend to live longer. Now, I was kind of surprised by that, but I went on the internet and I looked it up, and I found that in several different places that they say people who show kindness toward others, who are generous toward others, tend to live longer. I don't have an explanation for that, but it was interesting to me. And I think if you haven't seen the editorial, I did give it to Pastor Eric, and he would probably be willing to share it with you. And you can go online too and look it up. But it was interesting to me. Well, as I thought about generosity to family, I sort of start thinking about the different stages of, I guess, my own life and probably all of our lives, where, you know, the family starts out when you're very young, And then you get into young adulthood. You probably start a family of your own. And then you're in those middle ages. And then the later years of your life. And your relationships with your family kind of change over time. Because in the early years, you're really the caretaker and the provider for your family. And then as you get into the middle years, you're sort of more or less on your own. If you had children, they're probably away from you. And so you're learning to deal with that part of your life. And then, of course, as you get older, maybe you have grandchildren or you have a different relationship with maybe with other parts or other members of your family. But I thought about three particular experiences that I have had that I thought I would share with you. And the first of those has to do with the time that I was serving as a school superintendent. I did that in two different districts over my career. And as I thought about what could be done to improve the relationship that we had with students, I thought about the earliest years of life, those times when school really doesn't have any contact with children. It's the parent who really is the first teacher. And those early years are crucial, as you may know, to the development and the well-being of every child. There's been significant research done that says during the first few years that most of the connections in the brain are made, so that your brain is pretty well set by the time you're 2 years of age. And what causes those connections, those synapses to be formed, is simple things that most parents have done throughout their lives. You make eye contact with your child. You talk to them. You touch them. You tell them you love them. You do those simple little things that at the time probably don't seem like they really make that much difference, but they are extremely important. And so I know that most of you at this stage of your lives probably don't have young children, but you may have young grandchildren, or it's something that you could remind your children as their grandparent, or if you see a situation or circumstance, you might just remind those parents of young children that this is an important time. What we did when I was superintendent in SQIM is we started sending out monthly little newsletters to the parents of preschool age children, just offering parenting tips to remind them that they are the first teacher and that the role that they have is extremely important. And I think it's probably easy to overlook and forget, but it's extremely important. So that's one part of my life that I thought about when I thought about family. In another part of my life, I actually worked at the state prison in Clallam Bay as the director of the education program for the juveniles that were incarcerated there. When I first started that bit of my life, we had 120 inmates, young men under the age of 18. And as I would read through their bios, I would see that they didn't have much of a chance, quite frankly, from the get-go. And I think it's in part due to the fact that they didn't have that love and stimulation during their early years. Many of them were out on the streets when they could walk. Many of them didn't know who their father was, and maybe their mother didn't even know who their father was. It was sad to see, and I couldn't help but reflect and say, what would have happened to me if I had been placed in those circumstances? Would I have been able to survive and have the quality of life that I've been able to enjoy had I not had those good early years? So, you know, here again, I think I'm kind of pointing out the two extremes. You have the one where you're, as a parent of a young child, that you're nourishing them and helping them to develop. And then the other side of it where it doesn't go so well. And the third thing that I thought about was, here now in my later years, I have some members of our family who have some grandchildren who have been sort of thrust upon them. They have one who's in his early 20s and two other boys that are in their 9th and 10th grade years of high school. their mother, for some reason, has decided that she really can't deal with them, or she doesn't have a place for them anyway. They've been thrust onto these grandparents. And it's a struggle. It's hard. These are times that they really don't have time for themselves, and they're struggling with this a bit. And it caused me to think, too, then, about generosity in terms of how does it work out when generosity seems to be going only one direction. I think generosity is a two-way street. I think that you need to give generosity, but you also need to take generosity. You need to have generosity come back to you and your family. And I think that is what nurtures all of us and gives us a feeling of love and lets us know that God is with us as we enjoy our lives as family members. So that's what I would leave you with, is don't forget yourself when you're thinking of generosity. Be generous to yourself, love yourself, be kind to yourself, because I think in that way you can be more generous to others and more generous to God. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. So last week we introduced the idea of waiting for Jesus, and it's again, prepare the way of the Lord. That's what John the Baptist tells us in our reading today, and it's part of Advent. It's part of expectation, and so there's two kinds of waiting. There's the waiter kind, where you're waiting on a table kind of waiting, and there's the waiting where you're waiting for something to come. And when we're talking about generosity, we're kind of putting all those things together, and all these things go together for waiting. So it is my conviction that religious congregations are the most important carriers of meaning that we have, with one exception. They are the most important ground of purpose and direction that we have, with one exception. They are the most important source of an essential element of life, human community, with one exception. The one exception is human family. And that's from Lauren Mead from this book called The Once and Future Church. Besides church, which we'll talk about next week, so come back next week. And if you come regularly, well, that's what you're going to get next week. We're going to talk about the church and church family, but we are talking about family. So what does a generous home family look like? Ken kind of shared the extremes of that from his perspective, you know, from first teacher to being in the juvenile hall. But what does a generous family look like? A friend of mine, Ron Thompson, he posted this. He said, a perfect marriage is just two imperfect people who refuse to give up on each other. Now, if you have a partnership, this is, you know, if this maybe fits. I think it does for Beth and I in some ways. I think that's me, hopefully, in 1,000 years, still getting a kiss from Beth. But this was a kind of a better definition I found, because in this congregation just sitting here and from the previous service, there are dozens. We probably have in this congregation, I'm just guessing, 100 different variations of what family means. But this definition I found, two or more people who share goals and values, have long-term commitments to one another, and reside usually in the same house. So I think that's a pretty good definition. And when we talk about family and generous families, last week we talked about generosity is to freely give with nothing in return. And then I added the God infuser from Thanksgiving. This is a turkey baster, and we had some delicious turkey at Thanksgiving made by my new favorite in-law, my brother-in-law, who just made the best turkey ever I've had so far in gravy in my life, and I like food. But it's also a way of talking about how grace comes into our life, that God injects grace into our lives. So for me, and my understanding of grace is God's surprisingly, scandalously, unrestricted secret sauce of generosity infused into our deepest selves, often the most hurting parts of our marrow. And I picked marrow because that's the deep deep, deep place, you know, some of the deepest places in our body. But I also looked up a little bit about marrow, and in the body, it's the place and stuff that makes blood. It's a key component to our lymphatic or immune system, and it is a multipotent stem cell. Now, good, someone's shaking like, yes, nice job, Pastor. Well, it's, you know, and Google's amazing, so I am no nurse or doctor. I just looked it up. But in the spiritual body, I like to think of it as the place that gives life. So that's where God, that's the source. And it's a temporary immunity to sin. You know, we're saint and sinner, we like to say, as Lutherans, so we never get rid of sin. But when we're loved, when we experience joy, I really enjoyed talking with those kids, and we talked about what it means to be family. I mean, for me, I'm immune to sin when stuff like that happens. Love and joy, peace, compassion, all that stuff that you feel and know, that's that. And pushes us towards a diversity of generosity. And talking with people about generosity isn't just about money. It's about your heart. It's about giving time. It's about giving your skills. It's about loving. It's about mercy, compassion, all of those things. That's what that means. Gene Elstein says this about family. The family remains the locus of the deepest and most resonant ties, the most enduring hopes, the most intractable conflicts, the most poignant tragedies, and the sweetest triumphs human life afford to the vast majority of us. Passion, intimacy, and the surprising depth of love and hate, and the astonishing strength of human endurance and concern. Families evoke all of these. All of us are in families. Even if you're alone and don't have a human with you, pets are family. That's just how it is. When Beth and I get home today, those dogs will love us like we have been away for 5 years. And it's like you just go out the door and come back and go out the door and come back, and they still think it's 5 years ago. Pets are like that too. Pets are family. And all of our families invoke, I mean, this is so true. So much stuff happens, and around Christmas time, so much stuff happens. So, when we try and put it all together, when we're waiting for Jesus, serving for Jesus, when we're waiting for Jesus the Christ to come, when we're waiting for God, how does that work with our family? How does it all go together? I'm not going to answer that for you today. That's your thing that you have to figure out this holiday season, every time that you're with your family. That's not what I'm going to answer today. But, well, you know, I always like to give hints or holy suggestions. So the kids helped us a little bit. And this goes back to this thing. In this house, we're real, we make mistakes, we say I'm sorry, we have fun, we give hugs, we forgive, we love, we are family, welcome to our home. Those are just samples. They listed some more. You know what it is for you. You know what you need. You know what your family members need. This is just, you can go anywhere online and find this kind of list, this poster. It's a great poster. It's a great reminder. That's plenty to work on. But there might be other things for you, for yourself. So here's my suggestion. These are just some, for me, it's some of the things I think about. This cartoon, I don't know if you can see there or not. This is Family Circle. Yesterday's the past. Tomorrow's the future. But today is a gift. That's why it's called the present. What I would suggest is that generosity starts right now. Feel God's grace come to you this day, this moment. When we sing, when we share in communion, when you remember your baptism. When you're here, it's time to be renewed. When Ken talked about you need some stuff for yourself. If I'm that grandparent, if I'm that parent, if I'm that sister, if I'm that, whoever you are in that familiar setting, that family setting, there may be times where you can't hug and can't love and just are tired. And that's when you come here and be renewed. and be infused by God's grace again. Because you can come here and you probably can't sing. So the church and the community will sing for you. You don't have to sing, just hear it. And know again and again, all that God is after is just reminding you, reminding us in as many ways as possible, as many ways as humanly possible. I know you. I love you. But God, no, I know. But I didn't, I know. Be renewed. Be infused with my grace and my love. It starts now. This is a quote from Maya Angelou. I'd forgotten about Maya Angelou till our daughter did this wonderful, it's my daughter, so of course it's going to be wonderful. But she did this wonderful presentation of her and another person from Samoa, and they did this thing based on a poem by Maya Angelou called, what's it called? Ain't I a Woman? Is that what it's called? Or I'm a Phenomenon. And it's about being, what? Phenomenal Woman, there it is. Yes, I couldn't quite remember the title. And so, she found a recording of Maya Angelou. So as that recording was going, it showed just scenes of these two seniors in high school, just the magnificence of these two young women being who they are. And so I love her. And so this is what I would say is a good reminder. Have enough courage to trust love one more time. And always one more time. Have enough courage to trust love one more time. And always one more time. That's what generosity is. It's always one more time. That's what God's grace is for us. I know, God says, it's always one more time. And when you can't do one more time again, come here and be filled so that you can go and do it one more time. So my bottom line is a couple of things here. Family is thicker than blood. Maybe you've heard that. I don't know if you have or haven't. Well, but I looked online to see if anybody else has said that. Some people have said it. But for me, family is thicker than blood because, well, here. I have at least, try this exercise at home. I have at least 10 plus family configurations. My life began with a single mother. Then I had two parents, a mother and father, and a half sibling. Then, when my parents got divorced, one parent in Camino Island, one in San Francisco. Then they got remarried, so then I had two parents and step parents. One happened to be an alcoholic, one was in San Francisco. One summer, I was with my grandmother, just me and my grandmother. Then back to one parent, divorce happens again, and then someone lived with us for a while, a fatherly kind of figure. In the meantime, well, my dad was married 5 times. So I had a lot of configurations in San Francisco, a family, a lot, with in-laws, I mean, not in-laws, step, yes, blended family. My two best friends were like brothers to me. I realized I spent more time at their houses than my house every weekend. I mean, you know, we all went to school together, and then I would usually go to their house on the weekend. So I was an only child. So they're like brothers. When I went to college, the 4 roommates that I have, they were like brothers. We meet every year. We go down in California. I mean, it's wonderful. I met Beth in college. We became a family. Our first home as a family was Beth and I and my best friend from high school. We shared, my friend and I shared, we were co-directors of a homeless shelter. So Beth and I determined that if we could make it through that homeless shelter where we had a room, he had a room, and we shared a bathroom, we could do anything. And so far that's worked out. And then I had 2 mothers and some half-siblings. And a grandmother. And then, well, we'll see about this one. Maybe we'll be the sandwich generation where we're taking care of parents. That may happen as we take care of our children. Now, the reason why I say family is thicker than blood is because I was adopted. So my life began with a single mother, which was for an hour before my birth parents took over. And then 30 years later, I had the opportunity to meet my birth mother 20 years ago. And so for me, family it was a choice, because I always grew up just with me and my mom, and I was visiting my dad in San Francisco. I don't need more family. That's what I always thought. But I do have more family now, and they live in Texas. And my Texas mom's name is Judy, and my grandma is named Oma, and they happen to be German, is their background. My adoptive parents, my mom happens to be German. If I was not a Lutheran pastor, I don't know what is going to happen, why I'm not here. But family is thicker than blood. And do that exercise. See in your life how family has worked for you. Because it's changed for me. I'm sure it's changed for everybody. At least once or twice. Maybe 10 plus. I don't know. Maybe there's more. Because of God's continuous infusion, we are waiting for Jesus. We're waiting for our families. And by waiting, I mean serving and being generous and loving and hugging and all the things on the list. And we're waiting for God. We're being infused with grace so that we can be generous. And we wait for the Christ child, waiting with generosity now as we prepare the way of the Lord. God's work, our hands. Amen.